God, not those finger paintings again. They certainly were a waste of money.
The difference between Cal's taste in art and mine is that I have some. They're fascinating. There's truth, but no logic.
What's the artist's name?
Something Picasso.
Something Picasso. He won't amount to a thing. He won't, trust me.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Next Door Villain Podcast, where we are here today to talk about the infamous Kaladin Hockley.
Woo!
Who is a character that I didn't recognize by name alone.
But right, he's just kind of known as the asshole on Titanic.
Yes, yeah. He is the jerk fiancé of Rose from the film Titanic, about the sinking of the Titanic. You might have heard of it. It's maybe the most famous ship sinking in the history of ships that sank.
Yeah.
Kind of, and I think, you know, it's so well known because of how arrogant it was. And we just, loved when arrogant people fail. And it was like,
true.
I'm the best ship. And I can't, no one could sink me. And then the iceberg was like, watch me.
True. And people jinxed it so hard. Like, they're literally just walking on the ship. Like, this is the most unsinkable ship. And I'm like, stop saying that. Mm-hmm. Knock three times on your head.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. So this was a villain that I honestly had not thought a whole lot about, but interestingly enough, has been one of the most requested villains for our podcast. So many people have written us and been like, you got to do an episode on Cal. And so here we are. We're doing it.
We are doing it. Sir Kaladin Hockley.
Yeah. We had some listeners send us some awesome stuff. So you'll hear at the end of our episode today, a really cool poem from Allison Fortin. You got to stick around for that. It's pretty cool. And then, Tiana, do you want to tell our listeners about Dr. Damaris?
Yes, I would love to. I'm so excited for this. Dr. Damaris Raimondi is a listener of our podcast. She is also an eye doctor / optometrist. I guess those two things are the same. In New York. And she is the host of the podcast, Eyes Up Podcast. So if you're an optometrist, please check that podcast out. She is going to read in her voice some quotes that Cal says throughout the movie and also share her thoughts. And I guess eye doctors can be nerdy too.
Yeah, I would argue that eye doctors are generally nerdy. Right.
Do you have a lot of experience with eye doctors?
They're just like, they're smart, right? Anyways, we're going to be sprinkling some of her thoughts out, I think, through the episode, which is pretty cool. If you're listening right now, just know if you send us stuff about your favorite villains, we like to try to include it. We like to share your content with other people. But we got to dive in to this episode. So before we do, we got to do our 30-second intro challenge where we attempt to cram as much information about the villain into 30 seconds of impromptu speaking.
Yep, we did not prepare for this. So
no, we never do.
Yeah, now that it
shows.
Yes, it does.
Who's going first?
I can go first.
Ready?
I'm so excited for this Cal episode that I went to the bathroom and I washed my hands, but I didn't really wipe them on anything. And I ran back to the bedroom to record this. And I was so excited. So I feel like I'm excited enough to start the 30-second challenge.
Here we go. Tiana with wet hands gives a 30-second explanation of Cal Hockley from Titanic. 3, 2, 1, go.
So Cal Hockley, he comes from old money. He's really rich and he goes on the Titanic and he's married. No, not married. His fiance is Rose, but Rose really doesn't like him, but she kind of has to marry him for financial reasons. And he's kind of abusive. He's kind of an asshole. He doesn't like it when Rose is around with Jack, aka Leonardo DiCaprio. And he gets really upset about that. He hates it when they, you know, do stuff together. So he actually tries shooting them on a ship, which is nuts. And that's Cal.
Time's up. Pretty good. Pretty good run.
All right, Joe. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. Cal is this rich dude And as we all know, people with a lot of money tend to kind of be jerks. And so that's kind of his general demeanor, is like rich jerk dude. He is getting married off to Rose, who's a beautiful young woman whose family is in a lot of debt, but he doesn't know that. So both families are marrying each other because they want to combine with each other's fortune and make a super fortune. But unfortunately, his fiance Rose is not really into him, and he really wishes that she was, and that kind of motivates his character.
Good job.
Thank you. You know, as I was researching for this character, I went back and forth a lot between like really empathizing with him and then being like, this guy's a real jerk.
Yeah.
And so I struggled. I'll be honest. He's kind of abusive to Rose. He yells at her. He slaps her. He's violent in some ways. So I really struggled empathizing with him. And I think part of it is because more than any other character we've done, he is a very real character, as in he's very much a real person in a universe that's very real because it's modeled after a real event. So I think for that reason, it was difficult to empathize with him because it was easy to imagine him as a real person doing real jerky things to other people.
There's definitely a huge possibility that a guy similar to Cal, or men similar to Cal, were actually on the Titanic.
Yeah.
So Cal feels very realistic. I don't know if this will actually make me kind of a bad person. I don't know. Yeah, a bad person. Because I actually, and besides the abuse, it was actually kind of easy for me.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to remember, and I've said this before, that we're not excusing anyone's bad behavior, right? Like,
yeah,
he can do bad things that we can say are bad and know are bad, at the same time as also doing things that are worthy of our empathy. Like, we can empathize with him and still recognize that he is doing bad things that we do not need to excuse.
Right.
So I think you're okay, Tiana.
Yeah.
I'm backing you up.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I guess because I did see myself a little bit in Cal.
Oh, pray do tell.
Yes. Okay, so this is kind of random. So Cal is actually responsible for giving Rose the Heart of the Ocean, extremely expensive necklace that the characters in the Titanic really want, you know, several years later. And he gives her the Heart of the Ocean. And he kind of does it in a way that's like, you know, I can give you things. Like, I can give you what you want. You just have to put your trust in me and love me, because I think he could kind of sense that she wasn't too fond of him, but he didn't really care, and he was gonna marry her anyway.
And so I think you're touching on something that I saw throughout the whole film, was that he was constantly trying to get Rose to like him, and he was frustrated by that. And I don't know what happened before the film exactly, but I did feel bad that he seemed to be trying to get her to like him and doing it in not good ways.
Right.
But just like, she was just not giving him anything, and she doesn't owe him anything. But I can certainly understand the frustration of like wanting someone to like you.
Yeah. And he's genuinely like really trying. And I think he genuinely thinks that what he's doing is good. Like, look, I spent this Heart of the Ocean. Like, every other woman that I've talked to would be, you know, ecstatic about this. So I think this helps, and I think you would like it. And sometimes that happens in terms of like love languages. So my comment was that my number one love language is actually gift giving. And people who are gift givers actually are kind of looked at as a bit shallow, because our number one isn't spending time with them or doing an act of service. And I'm referencing the five love languages things. If you're not familiar with that, you can look it up. And so I felt a little, I had some empathy for him because, oh, that's my love language too. Like, if I wanted to show someone that I cared about them and I loved them, well, I don't know if Cal loves her, but if I had deep feelings for someone, I probably would pick out something expensive and be like, hey, look, I can give you things. I can be a good partner, or a partner that could benefit you. And look, I have something to show for it. But of course, Rose is like,
yeah, there's nothing wrong with gift giving, you know, as your primary love language. It's just, you got to be with someone who gift receiving is like the way that they receive love. And Rose is not that person.
True. You have to save her from slipping off a ship.
I think her love language is probably actions.
True.
Or good deeds.
I guess. Leonardo DiCaprio did a good deed in fooling around in a car on a ship.
Yeah. Well, arguably, and I'm going to make the argument that he did not do a good deed. I don't know.
Peter, are you saying he was bad?
I am saying that.
At sex?
Well,
or
I'm saying he was probably pretty good at sex, but in a bad way. You know, here's what I'm saying. Cal was kind of a jerk, and I'm not excusing any of that. But I kind of approached empathizing with him from a completely different angle. I'm kind of going to ad hominem attack Rose and Jack and say, yeah, Cal was kind of a jerk. But, I mean, especially Jack was kind of predatory. So let's take what we know. Rose was really emotionally distraught, probably because of her impending marriage to Cal, but also probably just a lot of the pressures of being a young woman in this time period and having to fit into a very particular box that she didn't want to be a part of. I mean, it's a really dark moment at the beginning of Titanic when she goes to jump off of the boat. Mm-hmm. And I mean, thankfully Jack is there and saves her, basically like keeps her from doing that. But she is clearly not emotionally in a great place. And Jack knows that. And what we know about Jack is that he is someone who takes advantage of whatever situations that he can to better himself, which, you know, generally we think of as like, oh, that's the American dream. Like you work hard to succeed and like, yeah, that's all fine and good, but maybe not when it is at the expense of someone else. And I think we do have to wonder about Jack's motives with Rose. Does he actually care about her? Or does he see someone who has a lot of money, who is emotionally weak and vulnerable, and he sees an opportunity, you know, because he doesn't really know her.
Yeah. And to tie this back to Cal, he thought, right, that Jack wouldn't be good for Rose, maybe for some of the reasons that you just stated. And plus because, you know, Cal looks down on people who are poor and thinks that Rose would have a bad life if she were with Jack.
Yeah. I mean, think of it this way, like, all Cal knows about Jack when he first meets him is that here's this dude who has his arms around his fiance. And maybe, I mean, Cal, I think, kind of spots it that like, oh, here's a guy who doesn't have a lot of money and he's trying to take advantage of this rich lady who is also 17. And Jack, I think, is 20, which is, I mean, not a huge age difference, but she's still young. And I'm not excusing the fact that Cal is 30.
Damn.
I'm just saying that Jack, it seems like he's kind of taking advantage of Rose's vulnerable state. Mm. So I hate quoting barstoolsports.com, but I read a really great article on there. The article's called Cal from Titanic is actually the good guy in the movie. Meanwhile, Jack and Rose are terrible. It's a really, really fun article, but it kind of roasts Rose a little bit in a way that was funny. So I wanted to read this quote from the article. It says, "She's literally every 17-year-old girl that has ever existed. Remember the church girl you went to high school with who discovered alcohol in college and read Atlas Shrugged? That's Rose. She met Jack and decided, I'll show my mom. Bitch, you're 17. Just because you like Monet paintings doesn't make you smart."
Wow. They really tore into Rose.
Yeah. So where I'm kind of getting at with all of this is that, like, Rose and Jack were not great either. Rose certainly was in an emotionally distraught place. Jack is this young man who is kind of an opportunist who takes advantage of situations to better himself. And that this entire story of Titanic is told by Rose. Like the movie that we're watching.
True.
Everything we see is a story told by Rose. And there are a lot of moments mm-hmm. in that story that Rose was not there for. So in this, true. So when she's telling the story, she did not see Cal put the stone into Jack's pocket. She assumes that happened when she's telling the story. There are a lot of moments like that where she was not in the room for what happened, but she's telling us what happened. So I think it's kind of the ultimate case of the unreliable narrator. Here, she was in an emotionally tough place, like almost dying on a ship and falling in love with a sexy young man. and not liking her fiance. I think there's a lot of reasons to question her interpretation of who Cal was. And I think Cal was probably a jerk, but maybe not nearly as terrible as she makes him out to be in her story.
Yeah, it's hard to say because sometimes our brains will inflate people and their actions and their emotions a bit in their memory. At the same time, though, we don't know anything else, so we kind of have to take her word for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm split because I also, like, if a woman tells me this guy was an asshole, I'm going to believe her. So I'm a little bit torn on that point of it.
I think that's fair. And I didn't think about that. And so that's a good point. I think we can safely assume that Cal was, in fact, a jerk, not a good dude.
Yeah.
I think he
was snobby. Yeah.
I think we can definitely trust that Rose was correct about that. But I do think we can still kind of call into question, knowing what we do about memory and the way that our brain, I wish I could explain this better, but the way that our brain like recreates memories, and as we tell stories, our memories actually change based on the stories that we tell. And she's what, like 90 years old when she's telling this story about when she was 20.
100.
She's 100 years old telling a story about when she was 17.
Yeah.
So I think it's reasonable to believe that the story has changed over time. How much it has changed, we're not sure. But I think we can wonder if Cal was as terrible as she remembers. And I think the reason that we can call that into question is because she was young, in love with a different person in an emotionally stressful situation. And I'm thinking a lot about what you said about trusting her belief, and it's kind of making me backtrack on this line of argument as well.
Hey, yeah. It's a journey.
Yeah. Ugh, all this stuff.
Yeah. Going off of that, I do want to say one point kind of more about the heart of the ocean and Cal.
The stone, right?
Yeah, the heart. Yeah, yeah. The super hella expensive necklace, which, by the way, you can get cheap versions of that online, like on Etsy. you can also get expensive versions online.
But why pay for the expensive version when it looks the same?
I don't know. Maybe there's some people who are like Cal who are like, I need the expensive version because I'm a Taurus and I like expensive things. Because I guess I'm a Taurus. Yeah. Anywho. We see that Cal is really controlling, abusive, he yells at her. And I also like kind of seeing that similarity between this villain and other villains that we've covered. I see a lot of similarities between him and Gaston, because he's very much someone who sees a threat and he wants to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And so he does everything in his power to fight it, kind of like Gaston. So I kind of like that.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you brought that up because it's not something I had thought about. I wonder if that strong feeling of like needing to take care of any threats comes from a place of insecurity. I suspect it probably does. Like, you want to deal with threats when they show up because you're afraid that the threat is better than you.
Yeah.
If you were more secure, then you wouldn't need to worry.
Yeah. And a quote that I really like from Cal is that he says something like,
Wait. Should we throw to Damaris here for this?
Yes.
quotation from Cal?
Yeah.
Damaris. Drop that quote.
Dr. Damaris.
Drop that quote.
I always win, Jack. One way or another.
I actually love that quote because sometimes I wish I were more like that. Like, I feel like not totally to the point where you screw people over and you like, and it results in their eventual deaths like Cal. But I like the confidence of, I always win. I always make it happen. I have a gun. I have money. I'm going to shoot you on a damn ship. Don't fucking mess with me. So many villains are so prideful, I think. And that, I think, is one of the key ingredients to making them a good villain. But to continue, I think there is probably a part of Cal that genuinely thinks Jack is bad for Rose because she's seen doing chaotic things in the basement with Jack, with kind of the lower classes. And he is brought up to believe that that is not classy, that's unwomanlike, that if you do something like that, that means that you are poor. And if you are poor, you will have a bad life or it will be very difficult for you. And that's why he's very controlling. You know, he makes sure that she doesn't smoke. he doesn't want her to do certain things, yeah. Not only because he's controlling, but also because there is going to be a part of him that says, you know, the reason why you shouldn't do these things is because of X, Y, Z. Like, there are reasons for why he doesn't want her to do certain things.
So on top of that, all this stuff she's doing with Jack is blatant flirting right in front of him. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm not saying that he's a great fiance, but like, could you be a little more subtle? Like, for example, she puts that nude painting that he does into his safe.
Nice.
So that he'll discover it.
I kind of like that, though.
It's a baller move by Rose for sure. But, you know, I mean, in a way, you could also understand why he's so mad at her and Jack, because they're having all this fun that he wants to be having with Rose.
Yeah.
As the person who's going to be married to her. And he's seen this woman that he believes that he loves slipping away from him.
Exactly. Yeah. All good points all around. And going back to one particular scene that has the heart of the ocean, the necklace in it. I don't know why I'm so obsessed with this necklace, but I can't stop talking about it. Maybe I'm a Taurus, so I just like extravagant things.
Maybe you're a Taurus? Do you not know?
No, I am a Taurus. I guess I'm very close to an Aries cusp, so Aries Taurus going on here. Weird mixture, but anywho. We are not a horoscope podcast. So there is a scene where Lovejoy, Cal's henchman, Lovejoy is super loyal to Cal, and I hate him. But he'd be a great henchman to talk about sometime. But Lovejoy puts the heart of the ocean in Jack's coat to help frame Jack and to make sure that he gets punished and separated from Rose so that Cal can have Rose. And it's actually not clear in the movie if Cal told Lovejoy to do that. I know that the Wikipedia article will say that it was Cal's idea, but I would argue that it's very unclear. And from my interpretation, I thought that it was just Lovejoy making the decision, because he's so freaking loyal to Cal, just making the decision to frame Jack so that Cal can get his way. So if we interpret it that way, and if I were Cal and I noticed that Jack stole the heart of the ocean, I would be like, see, this guy is just using you. Like, this guy is just an asshole, low-class dude who wants to take advantage of your money because he doesn't have money. And I would be pissed. And that does warrant maybe, you know, getting tied up to a pole while the Titanic's sinking. Yeah. Maybe not, actually. That's a little harsh. But yeah, I don't think Cal knows. I thought Cal thought genuinely that he stole the heart of the ocean.
That's a fair point. I hadn't even considered that, but now that you mention it and I'm thinking back to that part, you might be correct that Cal maybe didn't know.
Yeah, I don't think he knew.
Interesting. Another thing I wanted to mention, which is sort of off topic, but just popped into my head again, is just in Cal's defense for some of his actions, we do crazy stuff in traumatic situations. And this, I mean, this boat was sinking. There was certainly not enough lifeboats for everybody. They're in the freezing ocean. They're probably all going to die. Like, obviously he did some bad stuff, but like, well, I mean, what do you do? And like, people have all sorts of different reactions to tragic, difficult situations. So it's a little bit difficult, I think, to judge until you're in a situation like that, how exactly you're going to react to it, because it can be hard.
Oh, I do want to say, going off of that, a theory that I have. Okay, so a point is the grab the kid to get off the boat theory in Titanic when the ship is starting to sink. Out of desperation, Cal grabs a child who's just crying by herself, and he grabs her to try to get on the boat with the women and children, but he's a dude, so he's like, she's all I have, there's not a mother, you know, it's implied that, oh, there's not a mother in the mix, so I'm essentially the mother and father at the same time, please let me on this boat. At face value, that seems like such an asshole move, like you just like stole a kid. And you're using this kid to get off. It's unethical. But is his action, does it turn into being a good action, quote unquote good, because of the end result, which is that he potentially saved that little girl because that little girl was just standing there abandoned crying while everyone was running around, there's a high chance that that little girl would have died, and he essentially, potentially saved her by going on the boat with this little girl. Did he end up going on the boat? I can't even remember, but I just think this is funny because he's so bad, and he is bad, but just indirectly helps someone.
Yeah, I think this is a big moral question that philosophers of many ages are still pondering today.
Yeah.
But it's very possible that that child would not have lived had Cal not used it to get on the boat.
Use people.
Yeah.
Now, the lesson today is to use people.
Unfortunately, Cal then was shoving other people off the boat.
So it canceled out.
He may have even,
the goodness canceled out. Gone
into the negative, pushing so many people.
I shouldn't laugh, because he's pushing people off a boat. But
I want to, before I forget, I want to bring up another point that Damaris brought up Dr. Damaris brought up in the audio recording that she sent us, which is that Billy Zane is kind of hot and doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got Panic at the Disco vibe.
Yeah, that dark under eye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, so like everyone's obsessed with Leo DiCaprio, but like maybe you're looking in the wrong direction a little bit. And, you know, well, let's let Damaris speak.
After watching this again, I realized Billy Zane is hot. Like, I didn't think he was hot, but whoa, I need to watch his old movies because when I was a little girl, when I was 8 years old, when Titanic came out, you know, it was all about Leonardo DiCaprio, oh yeah, that, you know, Man in the Iron Mask. But Billy Zane, he hits different when you are his age too.
Yeah, so after I heard what Damaris said, I Googled Billy Zane hot. and so if buff, chiseled men is what you're attracted to, then you might want to do that search as well. But you might want to just pop that into Google and see what shows up. You might get a little nice surprise.
That's me. I mean, I like a lot of different types of men, though. I am straight, which is unfortunate sometimes, but...
That's okay.
Thanks.
It's okay to be...
Just men, yeah. You know, I don't know. Be nice to date a woman if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But just, that wouldn't really work out. I mean, never say never. I could fall in love with a woman.
Yeah. Something. Do you know what I'm saying? If you think you might be interested in her, send her a proposition. She'll consider it. I feel like I'm always inviting people to send you stuff on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Which results in some interesting things. But actually, it may not have been a result of what you say. Actually, this is a good place. This is a little bit off topic, but so women generally get hit with unsolicited dick pics from random dudes. And I don't even know these people. And they're just like, they like slide into my Instagram DMs and they're like, hey, here's my penis. And I'm like, because I don't want to see your penis. So, but they kind of trick me a little bit. Like they might say some innocent things beforehand and then they're just sending me a photo. And then I'm like, oh, is this just a photo of something random? And then I'm like hit with it and I'm like, okay, no. And then as payment for them subjecting me to their dick pic, I send a link to our podcast so that they can contribute to our listenership and our stats as payment. So I've done this for maybe 5 to 6 men. So if you're out there and you're listening to this, first of all, fuck you. But second of all, I'm sure there are people out there who want to see her dick, but they need to give that consent first. So, all right, there you go.
Yeah. I support,
yeah, support
everything
you.
Tiana said. I am in full support of.
I just did it yesterday, too.
Nice. Anyways, we're going to get to Allison's awesome Cal poem in a second, but to kind of tie this back to us personally and empathizing with Cal, we kind of wanted to pose this question and something for you as a listener to think about, and then we're going to give you our answers. Tiana, if you were one of the people on the Titanic as it was sinking, what would you be doing? Like, how would you react to that?
Is it, okay, first follow-up question. I wrote this question, so I should know it, but is this in 1912 or is this in 2021?
Let's say 1912 just for fun. But okay. I think, you know, really what we're looking for is like the what you specifically do is kind of a response to how you're emotionally reacting as well.
Yeah, because if it was in 2021, I'd be like texting people and stuff, but it's not.
Yeah, you're also so... probably in the middle of the ocean. There's no yeah, maybe there's not cell service. I don't know.
True. Okay. Well, first I would go to some kind of bar lounge area and I would crack open some brandy and I'd chug it. And well, no, I'd probably take a few swigs. And the reason why I would do that is because I actually think that alcohol, it's mainly bad maybe for situations like this, but I think that it could help a little bit in decreasing anxiety because you're not as fearful when you are drinking. And because of my emotions, so I'd probably take a few swigs of that brandy so that I can cope with my inevitable death. But then I have a lot of motion, like I deal with motion sickness, so I'd probably like vomit over like over the Titanic. So I've had alcohol, right? And it's my life. So, and I'm a woman, so that actually works out for me. So I'd be like, I'm a woman, I'm a woman. And I'd just be like waving my hands, I'm a woman. And then... and then hopefully, you know, I would get on a ship, but I don't have a baby right now, so I probably wouldn't have a baby in Titanic. So maybe I would stand next to someone with a baby so that it seems like I'm a part of their family because there's a lot of chaos happening. And so maybe they'll think, oh, she's part of the family. Maybe she has that baby who someone else is holding and they put me on a boat. And then I'd probably be crying the entire time, out first out of despair and then second, out of relief if I did get on a lifeboat. I'd also probably try to take down like a door, right? So like you try to find a hammer or something, you take down the door so that, and you hold it so that if you do go down, you can hopefully maybe stand on that door. But I don't know if I would be as clear-headed to do that, you know, and am I strong enough to take down a door? Am I in first class? Am I in the lower class? It all changes based on that.
Not to freak you out even anymore, but when a giant ship like that goes under, as it pulls under the water, it creates this like downward suction. You have to like get away from the main body of the ship. Like you gotta get away as quick as possible to avoid being sucked down with it.
Oh my gosh.
Just another thing to consider if you're on a ship that's going down.
But that's a lot of things to do all at once.
Yeah.
What would you do?
It's always hard to imagine what you would do in such a chaotic and difficult situation. But yeah, I've talked about this before. I'm a very anxious person. I have a lot of anxiety, particularly like social anxiety. And so there's a lot of chaos in my mind kind of on a regular basis. But the result of that has been that I find that when I am in especially difficult situations are especially like crazy situations that I am very calm. You know, I think I've heard that about anxious people.
Yes.
Otherwise.
That is common.
That like when other people are freaking out, when people who are less anxious are freaking out, part of it is because they're not used to that kind of like chaos. But if you're someone who's like really anxious all the time, then you're kind of used to it in a way. And yeah. So I've found that in disasters, I am very calm and level-headed. You know, it might also be me kind of like dissociating from a difficult situation, which is not always great, but actually kind of a useful thing for your body to do in a particularly difficult moment to get through it. So I think I would be kind of level-headed and trying to kind of like calmly think about what to do when other people are like running around and screaming around me. I'd be like, okay, so what's the first thing I need to do? What's the next thing? Kind of trying to come up with a plan. And ultimately, like, as a dude, I probably would go down with the ship. You know, I probably wouldn't have much of a choice. And I'm not trying to be, like, braggy or, like, show-offy, but I'm just not the guy who's going to, like, fight people to get on a lifeboat.
Mm. You never know.
Yeah. But, yeah, you never know.
That's tough, yeah. That's interesting. And I think maybe I would also experience some sense of shock. Maybe I might not fully believe of what's happening, or it hasn't really hit me. So I might actually be a little bit stoic at first. Yeah. I feel like maybe you would be too. Mm. But then eventually I would be screaming like, I'm a woman.
Well, I think, I mean, you at least have a good case to make as a woman.
Yeah.
I don't really have a good case for myself to be safe in 1912 or whatever this was.
But it also depends on what class I'm in. I assume that maybe whatever, how wealthy I am now would probably be translated in 1912.
You'd want to steal like a ball gown or something to make you appear more wealthy.
Yes, that is a very good point. Good. Okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, post-COVID, we're going to sign up for a cruise. Then we're going to sink it. And then we're going to put this to the test.
We'll bring audio recording equipment. So like play-by-play.
Yep, of everything. We're going to live tweet it. Carousel, here we come.
Great. Well, we have a really great poem to share. Honestly, I was like super excited when we received this. It came to us from Allison Fortin, who is a poet here in Maine, where I live. She's a part of the Portland Poet Society. And you can find her on Instagram at afortin_poetry. That's AFORTIN_poetry. And she posts a lot of cool stuff on there. So definitely check her out. Tiana, do you have anything you want to say?
No, just thank you so much to Dr. Damaris and to Allison Fortin for all of your amazing work.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
And without further ado, here is Allison with her poem about Cal.
The heart of Caledon Hockley, the heart of the ocean, built from hope and sapphire blue, once owned by the guillotined King Louis XVI, cradled in Cal's respectable hands. It gleams. He dreams. The wind plays with his black strands as he seeks comfort on board the indestructible Titanic. And she listens with vertical kisses to his disheartened whispers, to what all of his critics don't understand, why he stands disheveled with just a touch of the devil on this moving vessel. You see, he wasn't always made of steel. While Jack and Rose had dreams of making love in automobiles, he was trying to heal all of the hurt he fought to conceal, all of these woes from past love ideals, the bitter taste of young love on his tongue, sitting on some summer beach in Cape Cod, an untroubled boy with a faultless heart, speaking to a selfish girl disguised as art, her seafoam purse teeming with the riches of an older man, and this greedy daughter picked up Cal's heart from the sand and threw it into the swallowing water. Rose was a beauty with thorns. Cal was a man torn in two, learning long ago that women fell in love with glimmering gold more than they did with swimming souls. And this time, he wasn't going to let her slip off the railing and into the arms of another, even if it meant paying the debts of her mother, even if it meant forcing others to suffer, even if it meant he had to be a rougher lover, or smothering her in order to love her. Obsessed, possessed, a heartless mess, he was going to lay claim to his father's fortune at the hands of extortion, with roaring commotion, all to redeem his missing organ, lost in the ocean. And by God, she was going to love him, because he was going to give her the heart of the ocean, his only love token, his only hope to repair what's broken, the only heart he had left to give her. He thought maybe, just maybe, she would strip off her pearls and she would finally learn to love the carcass of a heartless human. The tangled chains fall between his fingers and the weight of the pendant sits in the palm of his spending hands, stripped of his once good title by the lips of unfair judges, crippled by the ripples of a love forever under review. He searches for his heart in the sea of mazarine blue, hoping one day it would find its way, crawling back to the sand and into his chest, still beating, still breathing, waiting to inhale love again, just like all poor love-deprived men.
Thanks again to Allison. That was awesome.
I don't know why, but that cracks me up whenever you do that. When we have it, listen to the poem. okay.
All right. So for our listeners, We didn't just listen to the poem. We're
baddies.
To all you baddies out there, we didn't listen to the poem just now. We listened to it another time, and now we're pretending like we just listened to it because we're going to insert it later, which is now for you, but later, whatever. They don't need to know all this. thank you so much for listening. This has been Joe Anderson and Tiana Hennings, the writers, producers, editors, creators of the Next Door Villain podcast.
Please rate us. It helps us out a lot. Please tell a friend or family member about us. It's almost my birthday, so please do that for me. It was also very recently Joe's birthday. In fact, it's always someone's birthday. So to celebrate, please share this podcast with your friends and family. It means a lot to us. We do this for free for you. And follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Next Door Villain.
And see you next time.
Or, yeah, we won't see them, but yeah. All right. All right, bye.